Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to the IGN UK podcast. It's me, Simon Cardy, and this week I'm joined by Matt Pursley.
Hello.
It's just me and Matt Pursley this week because the calendars have, people are off.
The calendar man came in and destroyed all of our plans. So yeah, there is literally me and you left. And also, we have just spent almost an entire week together.
Yeah, you must be sick of me.
Yeah, we've got nothing left to talk about.
Well, we can just regurgitate all our conversations we've had about the things we're going to talk about here. We've both been playing a lot of Stellar Blade, so that's the main thing we're going to talk about this week. And you've been delving into No Rest for the Wicked, which is in early access. And I've watched Baby Reindeer, the new Netflix series. So that's what we're going to talk about this week. And then we got sent in loads of feedback this week, which is fantastic because I did ask for it, so thank you very much. We'll get to quite a few bits of that and even save some for next week, so don't get disheartened if yours isn't read out today, because we did actually get sent a ton, so that's good. Thank you very much. But first, you must be sick of me. What was your, me and you, we spent a few days in Warsaw together. What was your highlight of the trip?
What was my highlight of the trip?
Just say me if you want.
No, it's never you, Simon. Okay. Obviously, you know, kind of like it's a lovely city that's got a bit of that kind of like on the edge of the communist sort of era. Mm-hmm. And you can see kind of like it's the old city meets the new. All of that was quite nice. Mm-hmm. We obviously visited quite a famous game studio over there.
I mean, we can say we visited CD Projekt Red. It's not for, you know, it's not for anything, yeah. You know. Don't get excited, you know, it's not for anything upcoming. But
get excited for cool IGN things.
For our features, yeah.
But no, they are about Cyberpunk and The Witcher.
The Witcher.
And so, nothing new. It's not they're not about to announce a game or anything like that. But exactly. Yeah, we had a cool time. It's my second time visiting CDPR. Mm-hmm. And that campus is a lot bigger than it used to be.
I imagine. What you said, you went there for Blood and Wine back in
2016.
Like 8 years ago now. Yeah. Wow, that's my first time there. First time in Poland. I enjoyed it. Probably not traditional Polish food, but I did have one of the best pizzas I've had in a long time. It was a lovely, fluffy crust to the pizza, which I enjoyed.
You really liked your pizza. I was less. I like the crust of pizza.
I'm a big fan of a big fluffy crust, and that had a lovely. I mean, the dough is the dough the most important part of a pizza? It has to be, isn't it?
I mean, the crust, like you want a good leoparding on your crust. Ooh. Which this didn't have. It wasn't a leoparded crust.
No, but I just love bread. Like bread is so good.
You had a focaccia that was, was very unusual focaccia. Yeah, it was just a pizza base.
Yeah, it was not focaccia, but we'll let them off because do you know what? The rest of Poland was good. We even had we bought a chocolate bar each and didn't realize until after we ate it that it was like 2% alcohol. Not that, you know, that's not tipping any of us over the edge.
Well, it's interesting because when you have a chocolate liqueur, they normally come as very small, like cylindrical chocolates in like a selection box. This was just like a bar, like a Dairy Milk that just happened to be packed full of liqueur-based filling.
Yeah, it was nice, but we had a wild time. But now we are back in Britain, which means we get to go back to our PlayStations and play some Stellar Blade. I've played, I think I'm much further now ahead of you. I'm about the on the PlayStation like home menu, it says I'm 76% through now.
So mine is in the upper 20%. So I've seen like a reasonable amount, and I know quite heavily how I feel about it, but I've certainly not seen the variety and the extent of how things play out that you have.
Yeah, I would say from the point you're what, like you said, like nearly a quarter of the way through, the variety, that's as much variety as you might get a little bit more variety, but you've kind of seen like the kind of cadence that game takes, which is, if you don't know, Stellar Blade, we talked about it briefly a few weeks ago in the demo, and I'm actually much more positive about it now than I was in the demo. I do think the first hour of the game is by far the weakest part of it. But yeah, it kind of goes in between these more, it's an action game that's mostly sword melee based, but it does have some ranged abilities at times as well. But it kind of shifts between these more linear levels that are more kind of Souls-like. I think when we played the demo, I thought this was going to be a much heavier Souls-like game than it is. It's got Souls-like influences, but it is much more like a Nier Automata. And it kind of, you have these linear levels that end in bosses, and then you have these more open world, like hub levels, which are full of side missions, but also some bosses in there as well. And I think, I've been kind of thinking as I go through it, do I prefer the open or the linear levels more? And I do think now I prefer the linear levels, because that's when you do get some of the bigger, more interesting boss fights. And also you get, there is more variety in those levels. There are puzzle sections. There's platforming sections, which the platform in this game is quite weak. I don't particularly enjoy doing those, but at least it does mix it up. And you also get, each level kind of has a little bit of a quirk, like the one I'm doing at the moment has, if you've seen the trailer, these almost like skateboarding sections in it.
Sure.
Which are quite fun. But yeah, I think I prefer, it's a weird game because I do really like it, but there is something missing. I think that something missing is that it's almost too, it's obviously inspired by Nier Automata, and it's obviously inspired by The Matrix. Like, there's even a level called The Matrix. There is Sentinels, there is Oracle,
this is set on an Earth that has been infected by the Natibas, this kind of like monstrous alien race. But the bastion of humankind is called Zion. Spelled differently, but it is called Zion.
Exactly. I'm really enjoying the game. I just think that's the problem, that like when you kind of evoke Nier Automata and The Matrix, which are like two masterpieces of those of games and films, I think, like when you kind of fall short of those, it always kind of is a bit more obvious, I think. Like, this is a solid 7 or 8 out of 10 for me, I think, from what I've played so far. But yeah, its world and its story and its characterization kind of just isn't quite there. But the combat itself, which I'm sure you'll have plenty to say about, is superb.
Yeah, I think in terms of, as you say, world, characterization, plot and themes, and the director of this game has very much put out the fact that Yoko Taro's work on Nier is important. We literally have an interview between the two of them on the site, I think, somewhere. But Nier is thematically much richer than this, at least as far as I am. And it sounds like from where you are, it doesn't sound that it's going to become much more elevated than it is at the moment. It has certain classic philosophy elements that it kind of hints at, but it never digs into them in the way that The Matrix does, for example. It's not looking at that relationship with AI. It's not looking at that relationship with personhood and anything like that. But it pays lip service to a lot of the visual design of these things. Some amazing cyberpunk imagery all through this, and never to the point where I think I'm going to remember it in the way that cyberpunk imagery is depicted, or The Matrix's version of it. But it's got that 90s anime aesthetic, which is nice. It's Ghost in the Shelly, it's Matrix-y, it's that kind of
Akira,
jam.
Yeah.
But yes, where it, combat, I think, is where it comes into its own. It's a better exploration game than I gave it credit for in the demo, but I wouldn't say by a massive chunk more. It's kind of fun to explore the open world areas, but the ones that I've been in so far are relatively scant in terms of what
you're not really
offer.
Like, you know, unlocking areas of a map, you know, in something like a Soul or something, even like Jedi Survivor or something, you're not like, you know, unlocking new areas. The whole place is open. You just kind of run in a direction to a point and go kill a few things, and then 9 out of 10 times the quest is basically pick up a message from a dead body, and that is the mission.
Yeah, there seems to be at least one thing in each area that's a little bit more complex than that. There was kind of the first area has this big sort of satellite dish array,
it's
kind
like
of thing.
Solar tower thing.
Yeah, yep. And then in the north of that area, there's more of a scrapyard area that has a little robot that's trapped, and then he sends you out to do wider things. But yeah, in general, it's an enjoyable world to explore, but it's not going to challenge you in the way that, for example, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth recently had quite challenging open world areas, in that like the activities that you were doing were reasonably straightforward, but actually your exploration and navigation of the space was quite interesting because there was never an obvious route to anywhere. It was always use a chocobo in an interesting way, or find an interesting kind of way to navigate a set of routes that would take you round and then come back on itself to bring you to where you need to be. So I just wanted to get that out of the way so that we can lead into combat, because that's where the meat
of the game
is.
Definitely the highlight of this game. Yeah.
So this is, as you say, seemed like it was going to be more like a Souls-like than I think it's actually turned out to be, because it has a bonfire style system, which are these little camps, which are quite fun to hang out at. They've got little vending machines in them and another record player that you can play songs on. But that's where you get all your health back. It fills your equivalent of an Estus flask, which is, I think, literally called like a beaker or a tumbler.
Tumbler.
So she has a lovely drink, your character, Eve. And it resurrects all the enemies in the area. And, you know, you're using those as your checkpoints as you go through. And yes, the combat has challenge, particularly against bosses, and is very parry-focused. Yeah. Almost all the enemies are melee-focused first, and your main defense is either dodging out the way or doing a parry. And if you do perfect dodges or perfect parries, it gives you an opportunity to do much more damage back. The thing that I was really interested in as I got to maybe about the 4-hour mark of the game was realizing that as you enhance your skill tree, which you do quite quickly in comparison to, I guess Sekiro's the closest of the FromSoft games, because that is a skill tree rather than stats. You fill out this skill tree quite quickly, and it becomes much closer to something like Bayonetta or Devil May Cry. And it doesn't feel like those games, but it's definitely more of a character action game than it is a Souls-like.
Definitely. I mean, the more and more abilities I was getting, and there's certain ones which I'm not going to spoil for people because you can't afford to play in it, but the more I play it, the more I'm like, oh, this is actually more like God of War than it is anything. Especially some of the special abilities you get later in the game, and the way it does mix in range with melee. I'm definitely, it's more, I think it owes as much to God of War than it does Sekiro.
Yeah, it's got kind of very Japanese character action game interactions, in the terms of, for example, there are attacks that enemies will do which you can then teleport behind them to get massive damage kind of swipes in. And so while there is a lot of the FromSofty stuff, and all enemies have kind of like shield, well, not all enemies, but boss enemies have shields that you have to break through. But you also have these contextual, if you hold down the left bumper, you can then use the face buttons to do special abilities. And some of those do much, much more damage to shields and are designed to be shield breakers to then get through. And there's a cadence in battle where those bosses, when they get to their next phase, they can recharge their shields and do stuff like that. But then on top of that, you also have this drone that's with you, which is your communications link to your man in the chair, basically a guy called Adam, and occasionally your engineer called Lily. But that drone is also a massive machine gun array that you can then grab it out the sky. It opens up into a double railgun sort of setup, and you can load shotgun shells into that. You can load pistol rounds into it. There's missiles.
Homing missiles and a big, like, almost like railgun laser beam sort of thing as well.
Yeah. And so, you know, that is, I can absolutely see where that idea has come from, because in Nier Automata, the character has a little drone that's a machine gun. But whereas that is, that's clearly influenced by shmups, right? All of the bullet hell arrangement of Nier Automata, that's where that's coming from. Whereas this is I'm trying to think of a game which is melee first but also has ranged.
I mean, Jedi Survivor kind of does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's got a little bit of that to it, I guess, but the gun is much more robust than what the
I mean, that's where I was talking about God of War, right? You can throw the axe. You can, like, it's got a bit of that.
And the gun isn't, it's not the main tool. You actually have very, very limited ammunition in that. And there are, when we were talking about variety earlier, one of the things I do like is there are occasional missions where the sword doesn't, you don't have the sword and you have to use the gun instead. Yeah. And I won't talk too much about the setup of those because they're best experienced, you know, fresh. But when they do give you that, there is always a lot of ammo replenishment. But when I did get to that point for the first time, I was quite pleased I'd upgraded the gun with a much larger magazine. Because if you'd only had five or six ammo in it, I got 40 at that time.
There's a few tips I'd have for the game like that. And also in the menus, turn on auto loot so you're not pressing R2 to pick up every tiny little bit of like polymer material that drops, because that will save your fingers. What was I going to say? I totally lost my train of thought, and that's annoying, isn't it? I think it was going to be about the combat and how in the first, like in the demo, I was like, oh, this is quite challenging. I will say, if the thought of people saying this is a Souls-like and those aren't your sort of things, I'd get that more out of your head, because very quickly after a few hours in this game, you'll be powerful enough that you are, not many fights become a challenge. Like, you're not going to be fighting the same boss 20 times. Like, at most, I think there's one boss that's taken me three goes, maybe.
Okay, but so like, I've had more trouble than that. Certainly there was a boss that took me about eight, nine times to do, but it's certainly not, it's not a Sekiro
boss. I wouldn't say it's a punishing. It's somewhere, it's probably a bit tougher than a God of War and a Jedi Survivor, right? But nowhere near like a Sekiro. It's somewhere in between that. But I think it's a very good difficulty. I'm just playing it on normal. I do know a new game plus hard mode does unlock, and I'm not sure how much tougher that makes it.
And importantly, there is a story mode for anybody that likes, you know, likes the look of something that's a bit Devil May Cry-ish a little bit with some of that soul stuff. And actually, there's probably an argument that this could be considered Training Wheels if you wanted to get into Souls.
Yeah. I think that, similar to, like, I would put it in that, I don't think it's as good as Jedi Survivor, but it is in that sort of bracket of, it's almost like a gateway drug to those games. We can talk a bit about Eve. Like, obviously, there's been a lot of chat about the characterization of her, and I'm not, you know, it's not my place to comment about Korean culture and how it reflects that at all, but, like, I'm not... Look, the character is sexualized. You can choose what... There are dozens and dozens of outfits in this game to pick from. You can choose how you want her to look. I'm not going to judge anyone. I've tried to keep it more like in the actual battle suits that make sense, but there are much more revealing outfits in this game. Am I offended by it? No. Is it my place to be offended by it? I don't know. But do I find it slightly embarrassing? Probably, I do. Like, it's a sort of, like, sort of game like if I was playing it at home, like, and like my parents walk past and like they see it and like, you shouldn't have to explain, like, you know, like, oh, this is actually good, I promise. it doesn't bother me too much, but I'm a bit like, it is slightly childish, isn't it?
I mentioned this when we were talking about the demo, and this thought carries on through to the full game. It reminds me a lot of the original Tomb Raider games in the you know, core design had made this incredibly sexualized heroine figure. Heroine is in the, you know, a female hero, not the drug. The game itself has no interest in the fact that Lara Croft had massive bazookas attached to her chest. And, you know, it just wasn't part of that world in the way that certain games later on in kind of like the evolution of video games do become quite leery. I mean, we were talking about Metal Gear Solid recently. Having now finished 3, Metal Gear Solid 3 is pretty horrible when it comes to the leeriness it has over Eva as a character. This is more like Tomb Raider in that there's actually very little of the game that seems to bear any...
No one ever mentions it, right?
And I think the reason why is because every woman in this game is sexualized to an uncomfortable degree, and so therefore it's just what this game believes women should look like. And I'll make it clear, I don't think that that's a good thing, but also, as you said earlier, this does come from a culture that is not ours. It's not Western culture.
No.
It is a Korean-developed game, obviously massively inspired by 90s anime, you know, from Japan. in which this is how women were stereotypes and built in those things. It is not to my taste at all, and I'd rather Eve wasn't like this. But as you say, I have been able to dress her more appropriately to her job as airborne warrior with a sword.
I've got a really cool, like, green, like, almost like RAF jacket, which is really good.
Oh, that sounds cool. Yeah,
in that look.
Whereas one of the things it does is it grays out a lot of the suit, so you don't always know exactly what you're buying, which has led to me not necessarily always buying things that I was like, oh, this isn't really what I wanted to, but I have seen some that was like, oh, okay, what's this going to turn out to be? And I've paid it. And it's even worse than what I thought it was going to be. One of them being a swimming costume that has a bunny tail and bunny ears on it. And side boob is just the only way to describe that. And it is, it's embarrassing and a bit silly. I stick with, there's just a very good, like, jumpsuit that's all in black that makes sense for the character. And I think that's...
Does it make story sense that she's wearing these? No.
No.
Ultimately, am I too bothered? Not really. No. I think that's the...
I don't think it should be there, but also that's my Western sensibilities. And, you know, I come from a very different culture and it's not actually affected my enjoyment of... Has it? It's a niggle on the enjoyment of the game, but for the most part...
It's kind of,
I don't care.
But it's the same with like any game, right? You can dress characters in stupid outfits and they look ridiculous in cutscenes. Like we're talking about Jedi Survivor, you can have that stupid mullet. I know it's a different argument, right? But it does kind of take you out. You're like, this looks ridiculous.
No, I mean, that's two different arguments, isn't it? One's about the sexualization of women. One's about just the absurdity of in engine cutscenes. But kind of like, it's interesting that this game comes out kind of like on the heels of Final Fantasy VII. In which Tifa is a sexy character, but she has agency and she's not designed entirely with the male gaze in mind, I don't think. I think there's a bit more to her, whereas Eve isn't actually interestingly characterized at all. She's just someone with a sword that goes and kills a load of very well-designed alien enemies. I just want to point out that it's Bong Joon-ho's concept designer that designed these enemies.
There's over 50 different enemies. There's a lot of different enemy types, and it's kind of good for a game like this as well, because it's all about remember kind of reading the rhythms of their attacks so you can parry. So it's good they mix it up all the time, because otherwise, if you just knew if it was four different enemy types, it would just become boring, wouldn't it? It would just become basically rinse and repeat.
And they look really cool. Like genuinely unsettlingly horrible.
Like some of them I haven't seen designs quite like those before. They're kind of almost like... There's like a little bit of Dead Space in there, a little bit of like the Sentinels from the Matrix mixed in there. Like, yeah, they're quite interesting. And we haven't actually, I don't think we mentioned the music as well, which is amazing. Like, it's quite, the parts heavily influenced by Nier, especially like the quieter, like camp music songs. But some of the boss battle ones I've had recently, there's one that's gone like full on like metalcore, which I've enjoyed. but yeah, I mean, so there's a lot to enjoy about this game. It doesn't quite come together. It is one I would kind of like to... I hope it does well, because I would like to see another one. I feel like they've got that combat down, and if they could just... I don't know how the story ends yet. I don't know if it leaves it open for more, but they've definitely got something there.
Yeah, as a core combat system, I think it's really strong, and, you know, yes, I'm not fond of Eve's visual design, but there is a cool... That, as I say, that very 90s anime vibe to it, I think is really cool. I love the monster designs. I think it's really cool that, like, the sword is her hair clip. Like, when she puts it away, it goes into her hair. All little bits like that are really cool. I just think it needs a story that wasn't just riffing on many, many very obvious points that it doesn't provide any depth on.
No. Let us know what you think about Stellar Blade if you're playing this week. IGN_UK feedback@IGN.com. I'm itching to finish it. I'm really enjoying it. Matt, you've been playing another game the past week or two. Something you previewed a couple of months ago but didn't actually get to play. But now you've managed to get early access to No Rest for the Wicked. Are you enjoying it?
I don't know.
That wasn't the I was expecting. But
It's a game that changes, but my perspective on it changes almost every 20 minutes extra that I play into it. So No Rest for the Wicked is the new game from Moon Studios, who are the people behind Ori and the Blind Forest and Ori of the Will-O-the-Wisps. And as you would expect, it is absolutely stunningly drop-dead gorgeous. It has some of the best cutscene work that I've seen for a while, largely because of this, you know, people use this term a lot, but painterly art style. It does, the entire world is hand-painted through, you know, digital art. And one of the reasons the cutscenes are so great is because this is an isometric, you know, we're talking your Baldur's Gate style, Diablo style top-down view. But when it does a cutscene, the camera drops into the world and you get to see all of these amazing characters up close. And it is another game that is a Souls-like, but not a Souls-like. So the combat is very heavily inspired by Dark Souls. It's really precise, punishing, challenging, tactical melee combat in a dark fantasy universe. And it's got that level of challenge and that level of like feeling very proud of yourself for overcoming a boss or something like that. But the way that the rest of the world works is not necessarily the same as a Dark Souls game. So, for example, the world itself is mapped out kind of similar to early Souls. Well, all the way through the Souls series, in that everything is connected. And you're constantly finding really cool ways that the map loops back on itself and secret passages, and you're dropping down ladders and all this kind of stuff. But where it diverts away from Souls is while there are what I would consider roughly bonfires, these giant blue gaps in kind of reality where you spawn from, they don't regenerate your health when you come back to them. And also, the enemies don't regenerate in an area either. So actually, when you kill an enemy, that enemy is gone, not for good. And I haven't figured out what the trigger is for them to come back. But I think you can essentially completely clear out an area. And it might not be until another quest is triggered in that area that new enemies turn up. Or maybe there has to be a certain amount of in-game days. I don't actually know what the fact is. But you are making a more permanent change to the world between deaths than you are in Dark Souls, which I would say was supposed to be the thing that maybe made it less frustrating than Dark Souls. However, as it's gone on, this is brutally difficult.
That's what I was going to ask. Is the combat like slow and precise like a Dark Souls, or is it a little bit more like a Diablo?
Absolutely no. Whilst it is an ARPG and they're bucketing it in the same design, like in the same design category as Diablo, it is not Diablo. It's far from it. It's slow, but it's not slow, it's just not spammy like Diablo.
It's deliberate, right?
Yeah, and whilst it is from a top-down perspective, the controls are very, very similar to Dark Souls. You have your shield, you have your parry, you have your attack. The one thing that it does do that I really like is that you have combos. So the more you attack, those attack animations slide into each other, and you get a real... You start quite early on with this, or at least my character did. I don't know if there's a randomization depending on what you choose at the start. But I started with this massive claymore, and so the character can barely lift it, which means that like you slam it over your head, and then when you press attack again, you almost drag it across the floor in a half moon. And that, I think, gives it a sense of heft and weight and polish that Dark Souls combat doesn't necessarily have.
Are there classes?
Based around the weapon that you take is what your abilities are. So for example, if you pick up a staff, you can then use magic spells because the magic spells are attached to the staff, and you hold down the bumper button, and that means that then your face buttons become the different magics that are on that staff. If you have a sword, you can still do the same, and you have what are called runic attacks. So on basic swords, that would just be you fire yourself into the sky and land on them with a massive kind of dive attack. The sword I've got at the moment, you set the sword on fire so you can do extra fire damage. I think the combat is genuinely very, very good, but fuck me, are the odds not in your favor. It is a single enemy is is genuinely brutal, even when you're areas.
This is in early access. Do you think this is something that needs to be tweaked? Yeah, like, do you think it's too much?
Absolutely. And that's why I think it's good that it's in early access, because I see so much promise in this game. I really like playing it, or at least I did up until maybe 2 hours ago in it. In which case, I love the way the world is built, and I can see all the promise in it. But I am finding myself, I feel like I'm batting my head against the wall, because I'm resurrecting to go out to effectively kill one enemy, to die, to go back, to come back. And now thankfully that enemy is gone, but I now need to defeat the other guy that was with that enemy.
Is it like a pure mechanics difficult thing, or is it like, is the gear you've got not good? Like, I don't know how good the gear is. Like, is it very RNG, like, based?
So you do have what I would consider loot. It is a loot game, but you don't get loot in the way that you do Diablo or Destiny. It's not popping out like pinatas. It's very rare that you find new swords or new armor. I am in an area that is, each area you go into has a descriptor that effectively tells you, are you at the right level to be here? And the area that I am in is considered safe, as opposed to the area that's on the other side of the main city, which is considered deadly. In the deadly area, I can't even do a percent damage to those enemies.
Wow.
But in the safe area, it is still a proper battle to fight one enemy. And the thing that I found is that I'm fine against one enemy, but quite frequently you're up against two or three, and I am really struggling to figure out how you're supposed to approach these wider fights. And then on top of this, your actual punishment for failing, whereas in Dark Souls that is losing your souls, right, and all of that. In this game, your equipment takes a beating, which is what it used to do in Demon Souls. And so your equipment will break if you die too many times. And then you have to go to the blacksmith in town and get it fixed using money. And I'm okay for money at the moment, but at the start of the game, it was very much like, oh, if a piece of equipment is broken, I've just got to go without it. And if your armor broke, I was like, I don't have enough money to repair it.
I was very excited for this game, but all you've done here is, and I know it's not your intention, is put me off, because it sounds like it's becoming a slog for you, at least, to carry on with.
Yeah, and then the other thing you've got is it has a, what I'd say is a Breath of the Wild-inspired healing system. So rather than an Estus flask, you have to make your meals to eat. And therefore, it can mean that if you've run out of stuff, you might have to say, okay, in this life, I'm just going to forage a bit and go out and pick mushrooms. And it's got a bit of the Zelda-y and a little bit of almost survival elements to it, in that you have a fishing rod, you have a pickaxe, you have an axe to cut down trees, and you gather all these raw materials. So pick mushrooms, fish for fish, kill rats and deer and stuff like that to get meat, and then you learn recipes and cook them, and better recipes give you more health and more other bonus buffs.
It sounds a lot more hardcore than I was expecting it to be, and maybe that shouldn't surprise me, because the Ori games, despite having very like pretty imagery and looking like a little bit like a cartoon at times, they're actually very challenging action platformers at times. How's the one other thing I want to say, like, cause we did a few features on it a couple months ago, and I was very intrigued, but again, like you said, the art style looks amazing, and the story, from what they're saying, sounded very intriguing. How's that been so far? Have you seen much of it?
Well, I think I'm interested to see how this changes over time, because it is early access, and I guess to a certain degree, it is similar to Baldur's Gate in that the early access has the first act of the game. Now, obviously, Baldur's Gate was 3 acts, which meant that you got quite a lot of content in early access, and they kept building out Act 1 as things went on. I don't know how many acts this game is planning to get, but you've got the first one. But what I would say is I've not actually done a lot of story yet, and I don't know if that's because it is built in a certain way for early access to allow people to play it with more regularity, or if this is something that the game is going to be. But there is a certain amount of roguelike to this, even though the game is not a roguelike. And by what I mean by that is, I have got to the point where the prologue I think is absolutely perfectly balanced, and you can get through that in the same speed as you would a Dark Souls kind of area. Then you get to this town, which is colossal, a genuinely really well put together town. And there you learn that if you bring back raw materials, you can build out the town, and you can build kind of new shops in there. You can build new routes through the town. And once you've done all of that tutorializing to tell you that you can build a house there and you can outfit it, it's almost like The Sims. On the other side are a set of soldiers that, like, we want you to go and meet our leader, and this is how you'll get onto the next section of the story. But that area out there is the deadly zone that I was saying earlier, that I can't touch the enemies out there. And so therefore you're going back into the three zones that were before the main city to do quests there. And so it does feel like what it wants to do is create new ways to use the environments that you've already been through. So there's a guy that lives in the city that will give you different bounties. And when you go out into those areas, it will spawn new enemies in them to help you fulfill those bounties. There are different challenges where it's like, oh, today you need to go out and forage 10 mushrooms and make soup out of it. So do you understand what I mean by that? There's a certain element of roguelike to that, in it's a reuse of the space over and over. Mm-hmm. But that means that I'm not progressing the story. What I'm doing is a lot more side quest stuff and a lot more mechanical rather than narrative focused.
Maybe I'll check it out once it's a bit more balanced, once mm-hmm. it's in a 1.0 version, because I am intrigued by it. I do, like I said, the art style looks gorgeous. Yeah. And
I like it a lot. I like a lot of the promise. I just think that the balancing of it is, it's so
I mean, that's what early
difficult.
Access is for, right? Yeah, like, yeah. Some of the best, Baldur's Gate, Hades, early access games that were in access, what, couple of years each, well, like that's took their time and turned into masterpieces.
It's why I'm excited that it is early access rather than they've just released it and this is what it is, because if this is what it was at release, I would probably bounce off it within the next 3 to 5 hours and probably never come back to it. Whereas knowing that this has got, I love the way that you navigate these spaces, because they are Dark Souls-y. They're probably more Dark Souls-y than Dark Souls is, in the way that they've knotted all of these beautiful little pathways together. And mm-hmm. as an isometric game, you interact with the environment much more like you would a traditional 3D game, because you can climb up onto like the rafters and run across all of the little sections. It's really well put together, and I think the quote-unquote survival bits of it are fairly well judged. I like the fact that I can cut down all this wood, take it to a guy, and he's like, oh, I'm all that scaffolding that's up on the city walls that's stopping you from getting to another part of the city, we're going to build that in. There's your quarters at the start of the game are so far from the city gates that it's a pain in the ass to get there, but you can just build stairs to complete that unit and I'm make that stuff short. It's really cool in all of its ideas. I just think it's so difficult at the moment.
Yeah,
that it's not
I'm all
good.
For a challenge in a game, but yeah, at the moment a game does become a slog for me, I do fall off quickly. I'm like, okay, I'm okay with a little bit of friction in games, but once I feel like I'm banging my head against the wall, I quickly go, no, thank you.
My favorite Souls game is Sekiro. Yeah. Like, I like the challenge, and so this, I think, shows how far that game has to come in terms of balance for it to find the right, you know, balance. For, you know, I think it's really cool. It's definitely, there's a long journey to go.
Yeah. Maybe this is came, in 18 months, 2 years, we'll be going, this is brilliant. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's the idea at early access, right? So I'm all for games, especially like this, that heavily rely on balancing and stuff like that, going into early access. So yeah, good luck to them. I look forward to it, and I will give it a go eventually.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
Baby Reindeer is a new series on Netflix. 7 half-an-hour episodes, so not too long if you want to give it a go. I will say not a light watch. It walks a tightrope, right? Cause it is technically like a dark comedy, but it is one of the darkest comedies you'll probably ever watch. It is based on the life of Richard Gadd, who is the writer of the show. It was initially a like one-man stage show. I think debuted at Edinburgh and then went down to London and won lots of awards, but it's now been adapted into a Netflix show of which he's written in and stars in it as well, plays himself, a 10-year younger version of himself essentially. And this, I can't imagine, because some of the, I'm not going to spoil it, the rough concept is he's an ambitious comedian who is working in a pub in London. That is the start of the story. And one day a woman walks in and he is nice to her. And it turns out this woman will be his stalker. And it is the story of this man's struggle with a stalker. And it adds in a lot more. It slowly reveals there's a lot more trauma in his life and a lot more trauma kind of in everyone's life around him. And it's a, and when I say it's a dark comedy, there are moments, it's the way he presents it and has written it in a way that I think is quite obviously intended to be cathartic, and there's a lot of moments of catharsis in the show. He's had a very rough at least 5 years of his life, and he's a comedian, right? You suppose you get through it by laughing and trying to joke about it, but it's also about trying to understand the other side of it. It's not like my stalker was an evil person and I had to get rid of them. It's trying to, like, almost the story of how kind of needed them at some points in his life, and also tried to understand that this is a very ill woman and she might need as much help as him. And it's at times very dark. There are scenes that are very uncomfortable to watch, and like I said, it's not a, I wouldn't put it on for a laugh. You kind of have to stay engaged with it. But it is, like, because it's 7 half-an-hour episodes. On the other hand, at times it's very easy to watch. It's a very confusing show to watch because I was like, oh, this is really fun. And then the next minute I'm like, this is harrowing. So, like, I'd highly recommend it. I think it's very, very good. I can see, I'm very intrigued, actually. I kind of wish I'd seen the one-man show, so I would be interested to see how that worked because so many other characters are involved in this. But yeah, I don't want to spoil it. It's not like a show that's full of twists and turns, right, necessarily, but kind of like, it's his story to tell. I don't want to tell it. And it's about the catharsis of him getting through it. I'd heavily recommend, I think you would like it a lot, Matt, although I do think you'd find it quite harrowing.
We saw Civil War last week, which, yes. I know you touched on a little bit on last week's podcast. I came out, I think, much more traumatized than you were. It's genuinely one of the most frightened I've been in years. And I was watching things in the cinema. But when I came out, I was speaking to one of my close friends, and he'd been to see Civil War and then watched Baby Reindeer basically in a day following day after. And he was like, I don't recommend doing the two together. No. He felt very hollow.
You'd be a shell of a human. I think it's one of the better things I've watched this year. It's just very, it's very, because it doesn't really, you're kind of left going, and it's kind of like his thing of like, throughout is like, there's things you're just like, why aren't you doing this? And mm-hmm. it's like, I can't explain. I don't know why I didn't, you know, why didn't I just go to the police day one? I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, something inside me was saying, don't do this. Like, some things are unexplainable, right? You go through life, you're not like, why did I do that? Or why didn't I do that? You can't explain everything.
Also, people that are under horrendous pressure or yeah. trauma and stuff like that, you can't expect people to have complete clarity in those moments.
Exactly. No. Very interesting show. I'd thoroughly recommend it. Yeah, check it out on Netflix. Dropped a couple of weeks ago. That's kind of we can't really do an endless search with two of us. It would just be me asking you quiz questions. Who wants to hear that? But what we do have is we have a couple of bits of feedback each to get through. Like I said, we had loads of feedback sent in, which I'm very grateful for. We'll get some more next week. But just a great range of subjects to talk about this week, of which some I'd love to hear your input as well, Matt, because you haven't talked about gravy, which we'll get onto a bit. But first, who have we got an email from there?
This is from Shane Heck, who says, hello from across the pond. After listening to your latest pod, I was surprised that Bentley from the Sly Cooper video game franchise wasn't mentioned. Were you talking about mascots?
We were talking about just best turtles. Best. Have you got a favorite turtle of any?
Not a turtle. I get no.
You can say a tortoise because that's a different thing.
Yeah, see, tangentially, a tortoise. The Pope tortoise from Elden Ring is a good shout, but he's not a turtle. I know that the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, they're
are turtles. But
of course, they're turtles.
Anatomy, like, they don't have flippers, do they?
I mean, yeah, but they also have nunchucks. So, you know, like, where are we?
I'm just thinking they're not better positioned as tortoises, which do have little toes.
Yeah, I can't remember what I settled on in the end, but you know, Bowser is a good one. Oh, it was Squirtle to Blastoise lineage.
They're not turtles, though.
What? They've got turtle shells.
Bowser's isn't a Cooper, is it? Is that what?
Yeah,
they're
turtles. They've got big turtle shells. Well, they're tortoises. They're probably more tortoises.
They are fictional creatures.
To be fair, yeah, they're probably... Yeah, but they're based on tortoises. He's a big tortoise. Are you telling me I can't have Blastoise now as a favourite turtle?
Who very clearly doesn't have flippers, right? He's got big, clumpy feet and big... He's much more tortoise.
Yeah, but he's got hydro cannon,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I know, but... Anatomy.
What about Franklin the turtle? That's where... I'm just in the same conversation I had last week. Anyway,
back to Shane, who says... Yeah. Bentley has always been a favourite of mine. Smart and a genius on how he was able to use his wheelchair in combat. I've never played a Sly Cooper game, so I've no idea what this is.
He's a turtle who attacks people in a wheelchair.
I'm gathering, yeah. The other topic I wanted to chime in on was what movie I'd like to see re-released in the theatres. As it turns out, Interstellar, a big favourite of Cardi's, I know, will be coming back out this fall for its 10th anniversary, and I couldn't be more excited. Never got the chance to see it on the big screen, and I can't wait to be able to finally see all of those great space scenes in IMAX. That's all I've got over here from Michigan. Cool. Keep up the good work, and as always, respect the sea and the gravediggers. Thank you from Shane Heck.
Sorry, I cut you off there, Shane. Yeah. I saw IMAX version of Interstellar. I think it would have been 5 years. It may have been for the 5-year anniversary they put it out again. Then they put a couple of Nolan films in IMAX a few years ago. And it was incredible in IMAX. I went to the BFI IMAX in Waterloo, and just the sound in there for that film was... When the docking sequence is just phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Have you got... I think that's what we talked about so many things last week. I've lost track, but I think that was if you could put a film you haven't seen in cinema that you could go and see.
Although I haven't seen.
Yeah, I think I said I regret. I think Apocalypse Now is one, because I haven't. I regretted not seeing it.
Yeah, we had the opportunity to see Apocalypse Now in Dolby Atmos for when.
Yeah,
they did
and I really should have. I think I was busy or something, because.
Well,
I'm
not that
stupid.
One of us had just come back from a trip, and it was like we've just travelled potentially transatlantic. Do we really want to then immediately go to the cinema?
I should have. Can they re-release it just for me now? That'd be good.
I've not seen. I've seen Aliens in on a screen, but mm-hmm. I've not seen Alien, and I would like to see Alien.
They're doing that. I think are Aliens going back to cinemas. Like, yeah,
lovely.
Like, this summer,
lovely. I think they're doing a re-release of the Lord of the Rings trilogy as well, aren't they?
That would be.
Obviously, I saw those because I'm old. I saw them when they came out. Mm-hmm. Say old, 35 isn't old, but, you know, old for a lot of people. I saw those when they came out, but I would absolutely see them again. But I've actually been quite lucky to see a lot of the films that I hold very precious at the cinema. Like, I've seen Blade Runner in the cinema at least 3 times, I think.
I have seen it 3 or 4 times in cinema. There are, like, some of my favourite films I haven't seen in the cinema. Like, I haven't seen Apocalypse Now, I haven't seen The Godfather in the cinema. Like,
I saw The Thing at the cinema, but what I will say is that I got there quite late and ended up having to be on the front row. And I don't recommend seeing The Thing from the front row, because at that weird angle, The Thing really does look very horrendous, but it's not the best viewing of that film. So I'd go and see The Thing again, if I could.
There we go. Good subject of conversation. IGN underscore UK feedback at IGN.com. I have an email from Wesley who says, greetings, IGN UK crew. First of all, I appreciate Matt's shout out for the Beginner's Guide. It was one of the few games that I've played and immediately forced my partner to play because of how unique a perspective and experience it is. Last week, Matt, we were talking about, this is other Matt that Wesley is referring to, which are about our favourite games that you can play in like 5 hours or less. I've not played the Beginner's Guide, but I've added it to my list. I don't know if you have.
Have I or have I not? No, I've watched the Stanley Parable and the Beginner's Guide, I think, have a certain amount of connective tissue. But
yeah, Beginner's Guide was after Stanley Parable, I believe. Anyway, Wesley's favourite short game is Emily is Away 2, the second game in a wonderful trilogy made by a solo developer where you just talk to friends through an old-school instant messenger interface. You have numbered dialogue choices like many narrative games, but actually have to type on your keyboard for the selected option to display and be sent, a mechanic that quickly took me back to my own afternoons after getting home from school. It's a setting that evokes nostalgia, but really is focused on telling a story about how messy first relationships can be and how there is both beauty and sadness to be found in that. I played the first Emily is Away. I don't think I played the second or third one. It definitely had that nostalgia. Like, it's basically like MSN Messenger, right?
Right.
And that was like when I was like between the ages of what, 13 to 16, that was the thing. Like, after school, go on MSN and talk to the people you were just talking to at school. And, you know, worry people by me having overly emo, like, lyrics as my status. And people are like, are you okay? I think I once had, because I had, like, also had, like, family on there. And, like, I had the lyric. It was like, this is a shout for anyone who remembers the band From First to Last, which was Skrillex's old band. He used to front, like, a post-hardcore band. I just had the lyrics, I'm on the verge of self-destruction as my status. And all my cousins just messaged me like, is everything okay? I was like, yeah, I'm just being an emo little 13, 14-year-old. It's all okay. So, yeah, that it kind of did bring back those memories. Have you played Emily as a way?
I've never actually heard of it.
Really? Mm. I check out. You might like it. Yeah, it's all about kind of talking to people on MSN and kind of, trying to work out. Yeah. Trying to,
sounds like it appeals to a very specific audience.
Yeah, well, you're a bit of a weeby dweeby boy, aren't you?
Sorry, what?
just insulting you, calling you a dweeb.
All right,
I've got into the word dweeb the last few weeks. I think it's a very good subtle little dig at someone.
Good for you. Let's move on. Yeah.
What's the next email, Matthew?
This one's from Chris, who says, hi guys, absolutely love the podcast. Your podcast actually partially inspired us to start our own PSP, PS Vita-centric podcast, Living La Vita Loca, on all platforms, if you're so inclined. Speaking of popular platforms, my favourite platformer to play in under 5 hours is Portal. What an absolutely amazing experience first time round. I've recently bought the Portal Collection on Switch to play through again, and none of the original polish from the orange box has fallen off in the port. If anyone has never played Portal, be prepared to lose 3 hours that you'll never want back. And everyone knows that cheese, chips, and gravy is the best combo in the land. Someone Portal gun that into my lap immediately. That sounds a bit of a mess into your lap.
Hopefully onto a bowl.
I was going to say, if you've got a bowl or receptacle plate or something on your lap, then fine, but... cheers from Chris.
Obviously, Portal is an all-timer.
Mm-hmm.
Portal 2 is better, but that's more like an 8-hour game, isn't that? It's a bit longer.
It could be a bit longer if it depends on how smart you are.
Yeah. Ooh. You having a pop at me there?
No, you just said that you could finish it in 8 hours, which I guess means you're
saying it's like 6 and it could take 8 if you're...
I think it could definitely be a little bit longer if you scratch your head a bit.
I was thinking about it. It's been long enough that since I've played the portal games that I can't remember solutions, so it might be time to revisit, because they are. Where's Portal 3? Why are Valve so weird, Matt? Why won't they give us what we want?
I don't know, but I would have Half-Life over Portal, so...
Have you had Alex? You've had one recently.
Yeah, well, it gave us the taste for more.
Yeah. What's your favourite? I mean, we're going to have a... I'll read these couple emails, then I'll ask you the most important question, Matt, which is... This first one is from Kenneth, who says, on the latest episode, you asked, what do you like to put gravy on? There is a deli counter near to where I live that makes the best breakfast burrito in the world. The key ingredient, white sausage gravy. It really is the move. Breakfast burritos can benefit from some kind of wet layer, and gravy fits the bill perfectly. Don't knock it till you try it. Love the show. Keep up the work. Kenneth from California. What is white sausage gravy, Matt?
It is like obviously a sauce.
yeah, it's a gravy.
If you've ever seen it, if you've ever been in America at like a breakfast buffet,
it's much
thicker than what you'd have in the UK. It's closer to like a bread sauce than it is a gravy, and it does tend to have like little chunks of sausage in there, I believe.
I do you know what? It probably tastes nice, but that sort of like thicker white sort, I don't know.
Not a big fan of the white sausage gravy in the way that kind of like grits as well. Not obviously is not a gravy, that kind of sloppier breakfast cuisine is not my my ball. And also, I'm not a breakfast burrito guy because I don't like eggs.
Oh yeah, well, I'm in a similar boat. Mm-hmm. What is your favourite thing to put gravy on? While I have you, actually,
I'm fairly a traditional. Roast. A roast, or something that is
toad in the hole.
Yeah, roast adjacent things. So things that basically, if mashed potato or potatoes are a cornerstone of the meal, it is likely that it's probably going to go well with gravy. If it's British, certainly.
Yeah, I don't know. I might have said this last week, but yeah, I was the weirdo up until probably, I'm going to say as late as like 14, was having ketchup with my roast.
It's not as odd.
I was a weirdo.
My sister, I reckon, didn't have gravy on her roast until she was 17. She used to have HP sauce on the roast.
That's even weirder. questions need to be asked there. I've got one more gravy related email from Liam. He says, hi, Cardi and Co. Off the back of the prompt, your favorite thing to put gravy on, it reminded me of a debate I had at work recently. Gravy on fish and chips.
Absolutely. We really needed
Jesse in for this, actually. Who is knows everything fish and chips. This simple question led to a near half-hour debate on the inappropriate or perhaps appropriateness of putting gravy on your chippy tea. I'm firmly in the camp of it's curry sauce or nothing, however, to the surprise of many people, seem to advocate for this horrendous combination. Even more shockingly, I went home and raised this very serious issue with my partner, and to my surprise, she was all for it. We are now no longer on speaking terms. I hope that's not true. What are the thoughts of the IGN crew? Respect the sea and keep up the fantastic podcast.
Just absolutely not. It sounds...
On the chips, not on the fish.
Not even on the chips. I'm not a chips and gravy person. You know, really? I know you went to university up in the North, Cardi, so therefore it would have been more of your diet.
I would have it if it's just chips. If I just got a portion of chips and it's some gravy on it, I'm happy with that. But yeah, if it's with the fish, then that's weird.
Oh, they're such contrasting flavors.
Why
do you
want like fish in a beef sauce?
Yeah, well, that's it, isn't it? Is that gravy? Obviously, while it is doesn't have to be made with beef, it is always a distinctly savory meat profiled sauce, right? Even vegetable gravy, like if you mix up some Bisto, the vegetarian one, tends to have a flavor profile that is veering towards that very distinctly savory, which fish is. It's not that, is it? And also the fact that the consistency of gravy, and I know that you can mix gravy to be thicker or thinner, but traditional thickness gravy with the flakiness of the fish.
It's
going to
make the batter so soggy.
Oh, it's this is nightmarish. Right. This is the sort of thing where if you were in room 101 in 1984 and O'Brien's got you strapped into the chair and he's, you know, that they put the rats on Winston's face in it. You could just imagine them just pouring a gravy slide with all this horrible, mushy fish and chips in it. That's a nightmare.
I know, you know, fish and chips, what you have on it is a very, you know, it's been debated for decades, depending on where in the country you're from, really. Like, I'm just firmly in the salt, vinegar, and some ketchup. That is just where I...
Yeah, I don't actually have lots ketchup of vinegar for thing. I would dip my chips in curry sauce, but I'd never order curry sauce myself. If someone else had got some, I'd dip my chips in it.
Curry sauce.
Actually, I'm kind of fine with just plain fish. I'll have tartar sauce, but that tends to be more of a...
See, I don't like tartar sauce. What about a little bit of squeeze of lemon on it?
See, this is where I'm about to go with the tartar sauce. I wouldn't have tartar sauce with fish that I got from the chippy. That is very much like you've gone to the pub and had a pub lunch. And that's where you'd put your lemon on your fish.
I can't remember the last time I went to a chippy and got like fish and chips. It's so... Have you seen the prices of fish and chips?
No, because I haven't.
It's like
been...
10 quid for a piece of cod or so. It's absurd. God, the country. What's happened? what else could you... Yeah. Obviously, curry sauce is a big one for people. But yeah, but God, gravy on fish. Come on.
No. It's bad. It makes my skin crawl.
There we go. If you've got anything that you think is going to horrify us, IGN_UKFearPet@IGN.com. So we've got plenty of emails from this week, but we'd always love more. Who knows who will be around next week? Probably just be me at this rate, just prattling on about something. But who knows? I should talk about Spurs for an hour. Start my own Spurs podcast. There we go. Put that in the feed. Probably won't want to talk about Spurs after this weekend, actually. I'm already doing the podcast, aren't I? Anyway, Matt, what sort of... We've got to have some Stellar Blade music, I suppose.
Think so, yeah.
Do we want one of the kind of more exciting battle themes, or do we want some of the nice camp, like when you're sitting around the camp music?
I know we know that a lot of people listen to this on their commute, but maybe a lot of people listen to it as they're trying to drift away. So let's put a more subdued track.
One of Eve's lullabies in there. Lovely. Okay. Oh, this was nice. I think we carried it without a third. So that was lovely. You're probably sick of the sight of me and the sound of me. So enjoy your weekend, Matthew.
Thank you.
Okay. Goodbye.
Bye.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.